crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho, cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RAMs, zips, sits. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
That's right. We did it. We broke 100 episodes of Binary Revolution Radio. You are listening to episode 101. 6/21/2005. That's June 21st, of those of you who can't count the 6. June 21st, 2005. I am Stank Dog, and joining me on this momentous episode, I don't know, we're just continuing going with the flow, so there's nothing momentous. We're just back on the path, as it were, doing more episodes, and joining me this week is Not Theory.
Oh, Not Theory.
Not Theory. So, we did make it past episode 100, and I had a lot of emails from people asking whether we were going to, quote, pull an RFA on them and end the show at episode 99 or even 100 after the craptacular. And I saw some comments in IRC and then posts on other sites saying, were we going to end it? But obviously not. You are listening to episode 101. That's where we should stop and just leave dead silence for the next 59 minutes.
need white noise.
Yeah.
That's what you need.
Toning. So, obviously, that is not the case. However, I will tell you, and I've hinted at this before, you can expect some very, very big changes, upcoming changes in the show, starting with Season 3. And Not Theory blowing his nose on the microphone is not one of them, I don't think.
Dude, I'm not making any noise at all.
I just got a big old wipe across the microphone, it sounded like.
I have a feeling it's voice pulse, considering how reliable and high quality they've been in the past couple of days.
As wonderful as voice pulse is, I've been having nothing but problems for about a week and a half, 2 weeks now with voice pulse. And I'm very, very unhappy with the whole situation. But it's working now, and actually this is pretty much the closest we've ever come to a live show. We've done Tuesday shows before at the last minute, but this one is really cutting it close, so by the time I'm done editing this all together and uploading it, I don't even know if this is going to get uploaded in time, quite honestly, so let's see how this goes.
We'll just have to make a short episode.
I guess we could do that. I could just
loop it. Yeah, 15 minutes.
We could just do the theme song and then say hello, goodbye, and then theme song again and just loop that over and over again.
Nice.
So, anyway, yes, we will be making some big changes to the show, starting with Season 3, which Season 3, as far as the way we count, is episode 105. So episode 104 is the last episode of Season 2. That will also be a clip show, some outtakes, some quotes, some funny moments from the show, kind of a special two-year anniversary deal. And then after that, yes, there will be some big changes to the show. So as far as I know, we are not going anywhere anytime soon, so just to get that out in the open and say it so that people don't start to talk. Of course, they'll talk anyway, but what are you going to do? Also, in the housekeeping section of the show, I don't think we should bother talking about Freak Factor, because we've been doing that a lot lately, but we had a little incident on episode 7 where we weren't around to get the show running that week, so we missed it, but we explained that on this past episode of Freak Factor, which Not Theory might be up or is up by the time they're listening to this, or?
I just put it up a little while ago. Actually, okay. Before I even announced that it was up on the forums, like 50 or 60 people had downloaded it already. So
holy
I guess
cow.
Nobody really needs to be told that it's up.
Yeah.
But it is.
Well, I just still boggles my mind that people actually want to... Oh, well, whatever. Anyway, so other than that, the only other housekeeping thing I have is to talk about our inaugural, however you want to spell it, the inaugural...
Correctly, I would prefer.
Spelling Nazi. The inaugural BenRev meeting took place in South Florida. That is, of course, where I'm... That's how I roll. That's where I'm rolling from. I don't know what the hell
that means. Yeah, you come correct.
I come correct, representing the Dirty Dirty. So we had our first... The Dirty Dirty Boca Raton, Florida. Yeah, boy.
Yeah. My ass.
With my 20-inch spinner rims on my Mercedes that my mom bought me. And anyway. yeah, we had our inaugural first meeting ever, first BenRev meeting, and it was pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Mostly people that we already knew, and kind of the whole point of the meeting was, A, to get people familiar with the new location of the meeting, and secondly, to kind of sit around and come up with some ideas of what do we want to do with the meeting and things like that. So we did the first one to kind of bounce some ideas around and to come up with a list of activities and things to do, and we kind of, for the most part, did that. So it wasn't a highly productive meeting. It was a lot of fun hanging around and kind of doing stuff, so but we did get some stuff accomplished so that now people will be able to start their own meetings. And if you go to BenRevMeetings.com, that's B-I-N-R-E-V Meetings.com, that is the website, and you will see information about the meetings that we've put up there. Still in progress as we're working on it, and it's using a default skin and all that, so keep all that in mind. But basically, we are building that site up, and I don't know if we're going to have time on this episode, but on an upcoming episode, I'll do a little content management system review on a couple of the CMSs that we tried. But basically, we picked a CMS that'll support supposedly multiple sites. So we'll be able to offer people free web hosting, free space, free bandwidth, et cetera, et cetera. If you want to create a meeting in your area, we'll have benrevmeetings.com/ and then whatever your NPA is. So for us, for example, it's 561. So, and anybody who is interested in starting one up, I don't care if it's a small town, big city, how many people you got going, if you've got 4 or 5 people that want to start a meeting, that's fine with me. Just get in touch with me on my personal email address. That's stankdog@stankdog. And we'll see what we can do and get you set up with a site and pass the information and some ideas on to you and see if we can get some of this stuff and make it happen. So we will provide bandwidth. We will provide the website. We will provide as much as we can to help your meeting successful. Just... do your part on your end, make it happen, get it going, and I think that's pretty much it.
Cool. I have an idea for this that you and I got to talk about after the show. But
this
is one of the first times I'm really getting to see the site, and it's pretty cool.
Well,
I like the Highway to Heaven MIDI that you have in the background. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I stole that from a GeoCities.
No, actually, you said you got the CMS on default, and you know how I love those white backgrounds, so
yes.
I like the way it looks, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to go anything crazy. And the other thing is, with BenRev.com, there is kind of an overall black and green theme to the site. So we kind of want to stick to that overall. This is a separate site, and I have no reason or no, you know, ties to doing it black and green again. I'm totally open to doing something different. So, right now it's just the default. But it's not going to change much more. You know, it looks fine with the white background. I'm okay with that, but... I still can't draw stick figures, so I might have to get somebody else helping me out with that, and I got somebody in mind for that. How about housekeeping before we move on? You got any housekeeping you want to talk about?
No, I kind of promised some stuff to some people, some new Bell's Mind features that I shouldn't have, so I'm working on those. But nothing too exciting. No, sorry. BigLetdown.com. Actually, the only thing I can say is that I may be reviving the GDP Freak Toys.
Ooh, I like that.
I got my Java development environment up and running again. I've been messing around with it for a bit. So maybe I'll update that so that it works with Bell's Mind and let people submit numbers by their phone again.
Yeah, and that
that's
was,
about it.
I love DDP Freak Toys. I had that on, I still have that on my phone, and I actually was using that a lot. Somebody would delete the database occasionally when I'd upload numbers, but anyway.
Hey, listen, you know, that was back in the day when I was, like, hosting it out of my apartment. The website didn't even have a name, so...
Back in the day when I was young,
but now
I'm not
I have
a
real
kid
hosting, and I have a better grasp of J2ME and all that crap, but I should be able to throw together a better application now.
I was singing Back in the Day.
Back in the day.
All right, well then, let's do some email. Now we have let's see here. We have a lot of email actually, and I know I probably say that just about every week. Actually, we had a couple light weeks of email before episode 100, but now we have to catch up because of episode 100. So I've got quite a few emails, and some of them are fairly long too. So let's, I guess, just start into them and see how much time we have and how much they take, and I guess kind of wing it from there. So I'm going to read pretty quickly, though, because I do want to burn through as many of these as we can. First email this week comes from, and boy, is this an interesting handle, Mickey Pork Pies. That's pretty cool. I like that one. Dear Mr. Dog and Mr. Theory, first of all, let me get out of the way groveling. Your show is extremely informative and entertaining to listening to. One of the best talk shows on podcast, full stop. Okay, I caught the last Telephonic Craptacular Extravaganza. Say it with me, not Theory. Extravaganza.
Extravaganza.
Ooh, look at you rolling the R. You go, boy.
Oh, yeah, I'm rolling deep like the president, son.
Don't make me start laughing now. All right, the Telephonic Craptacular Extravaganza, and wondered what happened at the end. It's sad that it's the last one, although you wouldn't be able to fit the title on the webpage, so I guess it's a good thing. I know the effort you put into it, and believe me, we, the listeners, very much appreciate your show and the co-host efforts. I even get my staff to listen and learn. Well, that's an interesting comment. I don't know where the staff is or anything, but that's an interesting statement, I guess.
They're the pork pie underlings.
Yeah, the pork pie factory. I hope, well, but see, I mean, we're not exactly safe for work, so I'm not sure, I hope we're not too gruesome and overboard.
Well,
but
if he's the boss, anything's safe for work.
Apparently so. All right, let's see. I am keen to explore the issue of social engineering. Social engineering is one of the subjects most people ignore, although it can, in some cases, get results quickly. Some examples. And before he goes into a couple examples here, I still want to do an episode on social engineering. I don't know if I'm going to get it in time for season two, but I was kind of waiting and hoping to get a particular co-host to do that episode with me. So that still might happen, but we'll see how that plays out. But I absolutely agree. But social engineering is a very tough topic to discuss on the radio. It's one of those things to me, and I don't know if you agree or disagree with this, not Theory, but it's one of those things to me that you really have to just do and practice and listen to people. So Freak Factor, I think, is a fantastic tool to go on because it's live and because it's unscripted. That's a show to me that it's perfectly acceptable and okay to get on there and try social engineering. And so what if you fail or fall on your face? Learn from it, and the process of testing and trying things will make you better.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be willing to try it, otherwise you're never going to get anywhere. It's kind of like sales. If you're a salesperson who's afraid to be rejected, you're never going to make sales calls and just blast through them. With social engineering, you got to be willing to call up a bunch of times, pretend like whoever you need to pretend to be, but just do it over and over again until you get results, and that's the only way you're going to get there.
Yeah, and again, I guess we should do this for another show, but you don't have to pretend to be anybody necessarily. But anyway, that's a whole nother branch. Did you get the message I left you earlier, by the way, to go totally off topic? That my social engineering, that my social engineering on that other thing paid off at the last minute?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that off the air. I'm sorry, that was a little tangent between Not Theory and I. We'll come back to that at some other time. Anyway, back to this email here. I got my money back, that's all I was saying.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, buddy, twice they got owned. Anyway, back to the email. Some examples. Language is very important in social engineering. I have seen a number of suppliers reduce the security of a product just by using the wrong language. For example, some Bluetooth devices can support pairing keys of up to 8 digits, but invariably the manual uses the term PIN when referring to security, which suggests a 4-digit code. When you think of a PIN, of course, you do think of a 4-digit code. I'm not sure if this is the same in the United States. Well, first of all, there's a little social engineering right there. He just kind of let go that he's not in the United States with that. So reading between the lines, you can pick up a lot of things here, too. The user is being conditioned to reduce the quality of their security. Most people think of a PIN as their bank card PIN, 4 digits. So, I'll break for a second and say, yeah, that's absolutely right. Language is very, very important to social engineering in many more ways than just that. And again, it's unfortunately a topic for another time, but your language, you have to be able to adapt your language and take advantage of your language, whether it be accents, style and type of speech, how articulate you are. There are a lot of things that you can do and change and alter the possibilities of your successful social engineering. Let's see, another example he has is trust nobody, which is one of my mottos. I use Google Groups, Ripe.net, etc. to sniff out personal contact details of a company's IT staff, IT staff, then ring the users of that company saying, this is blank from tech support. I have been speaking to blank, name, insert name from Ripe.net or whatever your target is, of course, is what he's meaning to say here. About and whatever issue you found on Google Groups. He's making up a specific example, but basically doing some footprinting, go out on the web, find open issues that the company is having, find the names of the people that are involved in that open issue, and then use that when you make a phone call. You get that information and the example he said, and then call and say, listen, I'm working with so-and-so about this problem. Can you change your password to this and try logging back in for me? So a lot of times people will fall for that. Use of familiar names can sometimes be enough. It's the old trusted party trick and have proved very effective for me in the past. Also, he's got another one here. Timing is everything. Pick your moment. Call up users or tech support after a power cut or other crisis. They are usually pretty ruffled, and we know how procedures go to the wall when we are rushed. Better still, if you can't sleep, remember that. Sorry if I insult anyone. But the best sysadmins probably don't work through the night. The graveyard shift is a good source of bored noobs running on default who are bursting to talk to somebody. Again, a valid point. Sometimes you'll be surprised. Sometimes those third shift operators are total noobs that can't do anything or give you any information because they're totally clueless. And you hire a lot of third shift monkey work. Sometimes people that just swap in and out tapes and stuff, and I've seen them firsthand, so that's not a universal truth, but yes, you certainly can sometimes get good information late night. And I think even one of my earliest articles in 2600 was about batch and interactive processing, if I remember, and transaction based systems, and it talked about kind of a similar topic insofar as the time zone difference and how you should play it to your advantage the way time zones work. It may be early evening here, but it's 3-hour difference, California. There's overseas, of course, whatever the time zone difference happens to be. So always keep in mind what time it is at the place that you are calling. So timing is everything. Timing is a lot. One more thing. Prawn, MP3 games, etc. If you want to target ICT staff, he keeps saying ICT. Am I missing? What is C? ICT? Computer technology?
Information and computer technology?
I guess. Okay. See, and that's another term he's using there. And earlier he said, what was it, power cuts instead of power outage? Anyway.
Yeah.
So a lot of stuff you can read into the language even of an email. So not all social engineering is over the phone or it's not over the phone. A lot of it's in person, face-to-face. A lot of it's via email, which is what I was referring to earlier with Knot Theory. And, well, that's a combination thereof. But anyway. Anyway, if you want to target IT staff, ICT staff, then disguise your payload as any one of these things, prawn, MP3 games, etc. Ring them up and milking them for information based on the chance they will win an iPod has an amazing effect recently. Anyway, keep up the good work. So, yeah, I kind of answered that as we went along, so I don't know really what more to follow up with on that, except that basically sometimes social engineering, I kind of referred to this earlier, sometimes it's pretending to be somebody from a different company or using a different name. Personally, I don't really go for that myself. I don't like it. It's kind of, I don't know, it feels dirty. I don't really like going that route myself. I would rather talk them to death. I would rather go with the nice guy route, play the Southern charm, sometimes go hostile if you have to, or just throw some trickery in there. I mean, just, I don't know. I prefer to just get my information by not pretending to be someone else. At least not someone specific. You can be pretend to be an interested customer or an interested student or something like that. But I don't like saying my name, I am such and such a name. I don't know. For me, I'm not real comfortable with that. But, hey, you do what you got to do, I guess, to get the information you want so everybody can draw their own lines. And the other thing is we can talk about it on the show and go over a lot of techniques. But I think, again, Knot Theory, I think you'll back me up on this, that a lot of it is simply improv. You have to be quick on your feet. You have to be off the cuff. You have to be able to make stuff up, improv, to just kind of roll with whatever the situation gives you.
Yeah, exactly. You can't really plan for everything. There are some instances where somewhat of a script will help you. If you need to do some similar thing over and over and over again, sometimes it'll help you a little bit, but you always got to be ready for when they throw some kind of curveball your way.
Right, right. I mean, you can memorize the script to call Walmart and tell them you got a shoplifter and you want them to find them down the aisle, but you know what? That gets kind of old sometimes. You want to be able to adapt and kind of change in case they transfer you somewhere else or in case somebody starts to question you. You need to be able to respond and try to keep it going and things like that. So preparing a script is all well and good, but really it's, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but to me, I really think that's one of those, you can teach some techniques, but a lot of it is just, I don't know, a gift, an innate ability. Some people just have the gift of gab. They really do. So anyway, I guess let's, boy, that was a good email to start with, but let's try to burn through some of these others if I can. I'm not very good at burning through email, but the next email is from Trust Non. I don't think that's supposed to be Trust No One, is it? Did I miss? Maybe I typed it.
It looks like Trust Non, but
yeah, okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what it came across as. Okay, one of us had a typo, him or me. But no, okay, we'll call him Trust Non. Who says, you've probably heard this before, but from loads of folk, but I thought it was worth mentioning. The proxy at my school blocks both binrev.com and rantradio.com. These are the only ones I tried, but it looks like any site that has the slightest piece of controversy is blocked. Yeah, we've heard this song before. I've also found that a large number of forums and email services are banned, including Gmail, Yahoo, etc. Well, that's kind of going a little bit far, but I guess maybe instead of an exclude list, they have an include list. But anyway, let's see. What bugs me about this most is that Hotmail is pretty much the only email site that you can get through this proxy. I finally got so annoyed with this that I have set up NPH proxy on a server so that I can use the internet properly. The system displays a message that you are to contact a class teacher to unblock a site. Most of the teachers don't know how to fix this, and the others know that you can't. All I can say is that NPH proxy is pretty useful and is worth a look to any listeners who have never heard of it. I also like the way you can use HTTPS when the network is very picky. Just a little bit of info for those who have never heard of it before. All right, Trust 9, thank you for that. And yeah, we've heard similar stories. I couldn't sit down and tell you a list of which ones we've... I know people have emailed us with certain sites, NetNanny, CyberSitter, and stuff like that. Some that block us and some that don't. I don't know the complete list or anything. But, yeah, proxy server's the way to get around that, of course. But we can't outright condone you putting software on there. Just be careful you don't get caught installing something that you shouldn't be installing at school. We hold no liability for that, but... And honestly, come on, you can't make it through one day without visiting the BinRev forums. I mean, I appreciate the visits and everything, but come on, wait till you get home, and then you can jack online and hook up to BinRev and get your fix for the night. But yes, NPH, I guess NPH proxy solves the problem as well. And also the HTTPS comment. I think we talked about this before in relation to the Great Firewall of China and how people were tunneling through that, because HTTPS is a secure protocol and the packets are encrypted, so it makes it a little bit easier for you to slip through content filters. You're not going to see keywords or anything that they may be searching for because they're encrypted and therefore are not going to be seen in plain text or filtered through in plain text. So that makes them tough, but a lot of places disable HTTPS. So,
yeah.
Anyway, let's see. Next email comes from... you want to do any... How about you do one? You feel like doing an email?
Which one are we on now? Are we on Booter?
We're on Booter, yeah. I gotta take a breath here.
Alrighty. Okay, Booter says, Yahoo recently took a different path toward expanding its search capabilities. It's focusing on the user experience. Enter Mindset, which is mindset.research.yahoo.com. Yahoo's new intent-driven beta search tool. Ooh, this sounds scary. Through the use of machine learning for text classification, Yahoo has added an algorithmic slide rule that attaches a more specific search string to better classify web pages in the first 100 results for any search query. Results are sorted according to user preference for commercial or non-commercial sites. Yahoo Mindset is a far more interesting development for the search engine marketing industry than anything Google has done recently. If Yahoo can develop the technology to slide paid search results as well as it does organic results, countless different ads could be delivered. I noticed that by doing a few searches and adjusting the slide bar, the results differed quite a bit. I'm hoping that they don't begin to track your search results by login like Google. Wow, this is the first I've heard of this. Have you messed with this at all?
I actually thank you, Booter, for the email, because, yes, I went after I got this email and did play around with it, and it's the mindset part of things itself did not really do much for me. The slider is basically kind of... If you're looking for online shopping sales sites, you slide it to one side. If you're looking for more of a personal research type site, you slide it to the left. And basically, it probably eliminates a few keywords or things that are heavy on ordering or buying, and vice versa. So that part really didn't impress me a whole lot. It was pretty straightforward. But what did occupy a lot of my time, because, of course, I like Google. I like Yahoo. I like some Google stuff, too, but I really like Yahoo. A lot of the stuff that they do is mirror images of Google and a lot of the stuff they're doing. And some things Google does better, some things Yahoo does better, which is kind of cool. But what I found more fun that occupied my time was just going to research.yahoo.com. That's their version of Google Labs, funny enough.
I don't think so.
Well, I'm saying it is, damn it. I just made it up. And I get copyright credit, and I'm going to put it in the dictionary. And anytime anybody uses funnily,
I'm going to talk about copyright and trademark and all that nonsense.
Oh, you've had a good week. Eh?
Oh, yeah.
You can ironically then, how about that? Go to labs.yahoo.com, and it will redirect you to research.yahoo.com, which, again, is their version of Google Labs, where they do a lot of their stuff that they're working on, downloadable applications, some beta products and stuff like that. And they've got some interesting things going on there, so you might want to go check that out. But in general, I'm telling you, Yahoo and Google are... That's some good, healthy competition going on right there. They're competing on a lot of different things. They're doing a lot of stuff similarly. again, some doing better than others. For example, Yahoo Groups has been around a lot longer than Google Groups. Google's trying to kind of blur the line between Google Groups and Usenet Groups, which it also owns. So it makes it kind of tricky. They're kind of trying to blur them, but the functionality's not quite there. I think Yahoo Groups completely blows it away, a lot more functionality. And I think the same thing about Yahoo Shopping. They had the shopping a long time ago, and I really don't use it a whole lot, but it is definitely better designed, better layout, in my opinion, anyway, than Yahoo. And I know Google just recently launched that I don't know if they call it My Google, but the customized Google where you can add local weather and stuff to the Google page. Have you tried that yet?
No.
It's such crap. It's got maybe 10 things you can customize. I mean, it's not even in the ballpark with My Yahoo. My Yahoo has been my start page for 5 years or more. I mean, nobody. I have to say, MSN, whatever the MSN, my MSN page is actually not too bad either. It's no My Yahoo, but it's better than Google also. Google's definitely in last place as far as that goes. But it's new. It's new to Google, so, you know, I guess give them some time. But, yeah, My Yahoo beats the holy bejesus out of anything else out there as far as customized search page. But at the same time, Google Maps totally kicks Yahoo Maps right in the nutsack.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man, Google Maps is so much better than Yahoo Maps or any other map site. It's so good. And as far as the mail services, you know, Gmail came out with the gigaspace, and now it's up to 2 gigs and climbing. Big whoop, I don't need all that. That doesn't impress me. What about functionality? What about the things that it can do for me? And it doesn't do as much as the Yahoo Mail. I mean, Yahoo's actually bumped up to a gig. Yeah, it's in response to Gmail. You know, but that doesn't matter what the reason is to me. The functionality has always been better. I like the folder motif, moving things into folder. And you can search Yahoo Mail just like you search Gmail. So as far as that functionality, you can search through search through your Yahoo Mail just as easily. Plus, Yahoo offers you calendars and all kinds of other stuff that Google doesn't have yet. Google's supposed to be developing a calendar, I believe. I don't know when it's going to be out, but I think they've announced that they are developing a calendaring system. So I'm telling you, there is some very good, healthy competition going on between the two of these companies. So it's all about, and I've said before on the show that the search engine results themselves, I don't know if you'll agree or disagree with me on this or if you've tried too many of these, but to me, Google, Yahoo, and MSN Search are all interchangeable to me now. They all give me the similar or same results, the same number of results. The only difference is that maybe one has indexed more recently than the other, some pages. There's always going to be a little bit of difference, but as far as how much they cover now and how many pages, they're all interchangeable to me now. Have you had any more or less luck on any of the search engines than others?
You know, I know people think I'm an idiot when I say this, but the only search engine I use at all is Google. And the reason is not because I think that Google is the best thing in the world, but, you know, it's my start page and I search for stuff and the programming stuff I'm looking for, pretty much I find everything I need. So, you know, it's my one-stop shop.
Yeah, I have my Yahoo as my start page most of the time. And even that being said, it has a search thing at the top of my Yahoo. I usually don't bother to use that. I usually have bookmarked. I have shortcuts up in my Firefox bar, a shortcut to Google search, a shortcut to MSN search, and a shortcut to Yahoo search, search.yahoo.com. So I have all three of them up there, and I just randomly click one each time. I try to mix and match between them so that I can keep up with all the different ones. And again, no matter which one I pick, I usually find what I want or what I'm looking for. So for the most part, try them all and see if there's any difference for you. But again, the email itself, research.yahoo.com, and you'll see a lot of other cool projects coming up from Yahoo, just like the stuff coming up from Google, so check that out. I did not look to see if MSN has a similar deal, but yeah, MSN's not as interesting to me, I guess. I don't know. All right, next email comes from Systems Glitch, as I try to catch up here. Systems Glitch says, for a second there I thought it might be System Shock Sore, but luckily it was Systems Glitch. I was excited. Oh, I was all happy, but now it's Systems Glitch, which I'm still happy, don't get me wrong. Systems Glitch says, I've been listening to the old archived episodes on my MP3 player. Since things such as BinRev Radio aren't allowed at... Oh, should I read that on the air?
Nah.
Yeah, I'm going to skip...
I wouldn't.
Yeah, I'm going to skip that name just in case. I guess I can say... At this particular military academy. I think I can say that safely. There's a few of those. And I'm behind by about 9 months. I was listening to episode 81 or 82 and heard mention of war-shitting. Oh, yeah. War-shitting's a classic bit. Which reminded me of 802.11 experiments at school. Kriegscheisen. Wow. He provided pronunciation for me, which is good. Kriegscheisen.
That's nice.
Is German for war-shitting. See, I learned something on this episode of Binary Revolution Radio. A very special
Binary Revolution Radio.
I learned how to say German war shitting in German. That's great.
Kriegscheisen.
Kriegscheisen.
Achtung, Kriegscheisen.
And for all of you listeners, if I'm at DEF CON and you hear me yell out Kriegscheisen, you know where I'm going. See, we're all
nice.
Enlightened. Thank you. Thank you, Systems Glitch, for bringing us all up a notch by teaching us German dirty words. Thank you. Kriegscheisen was used in context with my roommate in military school, who, in a seemingly unconnected incident, was the first in the battalion, and only as far as I know, to use a laptop while shitting as part of our test for high-gain copper-to-wireless transceiver experiment. It turned out to be a good selling point for our pirate wireless system. Access to the school network was controlled and removed if you got caught with porn or IM or something. So we broadcast it from a proxy through wireless and charged for the WEP keys. Like, WEP's hard to crack. So we told people, it works anywhere, even when you're taking a shit. All right, now hold on a second. Now, let's be honest here. Let's just get this out in the open. Your boy's in a bathroom in military school, which is mostly guys, downloading Prawn. He's not war shitting. He's war jacking. Two completely different things.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, come on. There's some war jacking going on there.
Maybe he's just reading the articles on ratemypoo.com or whatever weird site he's going to.
That's good reading on there.
Oh yeah.
Man. I'm holding back another joke. I'm going to save that one. Okay, next email. Actually, I tell you what, why don't you read the next email? Because it kind of relates a little bit to your project.
Ooh. Okay. Hey, Stankdog. I've been catching up on old episodes, and I really love BinRev Radio, Freak Factor, and Hack TV. Kudos to everyone at BinRev.com. I just want to ask if FreakFactor.net is going to get a podcast, or if there already was one, or what's the URL. Love the site. Keep up the good work. Okay. Will there be a podcast? Yeah, sure. I have to admit that I know all about podcasting, but I've never done it because I'm a lazy bastard. But if people really want it, I'll set it up.
Yeah,
it's just an XML file, right? That's got a couple of links in it. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's very simple, straightforward, and there are actually already scripts out there written that'll look through your directory, and all you got to do is drop the file in there, and it'll automatically update. Of course, Nick84 has written some scripts that can probably be modified easily to do the same thing. So there's not that much to making it. I mean, you can make them manually if you wanted to. It's not much to it for setting it up, but I just still think it's so funny that, and you and I said from the beginning we weren't even going to record this damn show. And here we are making...
I was like, maybe we'll record it in case something funny happens, but I didn't think it would be like...
Yeah.
I didn't think people would want to listen to it every week. Not that I think it's bad or anything. I just thought, like, you know, it was something for the participants to mess around with at the time and then talk about it in the forums for the week, but not really go back and listen to as if it was, meant to be a real informational show, but... by the way, since the show started, since we started recording, we've had like 300 downloads of Freak Factor 7. Obviously not because we told them, but just because I posted on the forums, and it's just insane. It blows my mind how much bandwidth every month goes to Freak Factor.
Well,
so
I don't know. It's definitely you know, we said all along, too, that this was kind of an experimental show. We just wanted to try it to see if it could be done just for the challenge and just to do something different and unique. And it's even doing and it's doing things that we didn't even expect when we started this experiment. So we're actually surprised with a lot of the results, which is great, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was initially in it just for the technology. I wanted to get after streaming and, like, do some cool phone system stuff, but I'm getting a real kick out of how popular it's become.
Yep, interesting stuff. And we still have some fun twists and other things to add to it when we get around to it, I guess. And that email was from someone who sent their real name, so, of course, Not Theory did not read that on the air. That was a good choice. Okay, next email. Let's see. I got another email from a real name, and I'm not going to read this on the air just in case. Maybe if I read the email, it'll be self-explanatory why. This person says, Stank, how's it going? I recently listened to the 94th episode of Ben Rev Radio, of course, and wanted to comment on your reaction to having a female write to you. I have been listening to your show since episode 83, and I enjoy it very much. Please do not be surprised if girls are listening to your show. We like computers, too. I am not a hacker, but I am certainly a geek, a Mac geek, to be specific. However, I know a good amount about all the major OSs out there, and can even build my own Windows box. I'm not elite, but I can speak it. That right there is a great t-shirt slogan to me, by the way. I'm not elite,
yeah,
but
I
can speak it, yeah. Anyway, I am an electrical engineer at, I don't know if I should read, I'm not going to skip the university name just in case, and I'm starting my Master's of Manufacturing Engineering in the fall. Hacking, freaking, and the like are my hobbies. Maybe we'll see you at DEF CON 13 this summer. So yeah, the reason I didn't read the real name on the air is just in case any of you freaky perverts out there start looking her up and trying to send her email or dirty pictures of yourselves on ratemypoo.com or whatever.
So, freaky perverts out there. You mean like yourself? People who are taking after the stank dog?
I have like an autoresponder. If it detects that the person who sent the email is female, it automatically sends a naked picture of me back. Well, it's a naked picture of Brad Pitt, but it with my name over it.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. That's what got me into DDP in first.
Exactly.
I was pretending like I was a chick. I got that picture. I was like, oh, my God.
And then
when we met
each other in real life for the first time, we were both highly aroused, actually. But that's, I guess, a different story.
Yeah, I was like, you're even hotter in person.
That's a story for another time. But, no, actually, joking aside, I'm not surprised that women listen to the show. I mean, don't get me wrong or anything, but come on. Let's be honest here, and we're honest on this show. You're an engineering major. I mean, we're intelligent people here. What do you think the ratio of male to female listeners is, honestly? How many female listeners do you think there are? I mean, I think it's great that you're listening, and we've had others in the past. People have emailed. That's great. But let's be honest. I think you're in the extreme minority. Binary Revolution Radio, let's face it, we're a sausage party. It's a giant sausage party online. The majority, and there is actually a panel at DEF CON, I believe, and I've seen this panel at other...
The revolution will be a sausage party.
Don't give them that sound bite to play. Oh, man. There's a...
So you were talking about the panel.
Yeah, there's a panel that about why there aren't very many females in the hacking scene, as it were. And I don't know exactly why that is, except that generally it is, traditionally, it's a male-dominated... I don't know, subgenre or whatever, you know, a scene. I don't know what the proper term is here, but it's just always predominantly male-dominated. Now, that's not a good thing or a bad thing, but it's a matter of fact. And as an engineer, I think you probably know how to deal with facts. I would love if there were more young ladies. See, I can't say chicks now. I got to sound all intelligent and non-sexist and everything. I wish that there were more young ladies involved in hacking. I really do. Being an old man, of course I really do. But I tell you what, I'll do it like this. Well, let's make a challenge out of this. I'll hereby come right out on the show, episode 101. If you're a female listener, stand up. This is your chance. Stand up and be heard. Email us and let me know. Confirm Okay, somehow, I don't know how we're going to confirm that they're a female or not. Send me an email. So I guess we'll have to do the honor system here or something. Or, you know, chicks can send pics, whatever. But just email me and confirm that you are a female who listens to the show. And we'll do the honor system. It doesn't matter. Just out of curiosity, and let's see. Let's make a game of this. I'm going to put you on the spot here, not theory. Let's go ahead and put this out there. I know for a fact that we had, well, not exactly a fact, but according to our statistics, that we had around 6,000-plus downloads of episode 98 of the show. I just checked. Out of 6,000 downloads, how many emails do you think we will get now that I have said this on the air? If you are a female listening to the show, email me. How many emails from female listeners do you think we're going to get? Now, keep in mind, people can send in fake emails and forge them. I'm going to ask them to not, you know, let's play fair a little bit. We all know you can spoof emails or go to a remailer or whatever. So let's play fair and let's see, because this is kind of a fun experiment. Not theory, what do you think, out of 6,000 plus downloads, how many people, how many females do you think will email us after this?
Less than 20.
Less, okay, I'm saying even less than 12. I'm saying less, I'll say less than a dozen. That's my guess. So, and if a dozen do, and if more do, that's great. Actually, I would love to lose this. I would love to be wrong. So, prove me wrong, please, but... yeah, I'm saying less than 12. Let's see how this works out. This is 101. Let's see by episode 102, which is a week from today, see how many people email us. So, also, that being said, the last comment she says, maybe we'll see you at DEF CON 13. Absolutely, and let me come out now on the show and say that I'll gladly meet anybody, any of our listeners at DEF CON, and thank you personally for supporting us and supporting the show, male, female alike. You know, the best thing probably to do, and I said this in the forums, is to meet me after my presentation. Right now, I'm scheduled to present Saturday night from 8 to 9 in Track 1. Now, they claim that they're going to change that they're changing everybody around, that these are tentative times. So I hopefully they won't change it now that I've announced it on the show. But the best time to meet me is right after that. There's no more presentations. I'm the last presenter of the day. We can go hang out at the pool. We can go grab something to eat. We can meet everybody. And I will personally, you know, thank everybody that supported this because, you know, it is the show is going because people are enjoying it and listening to it and supporting it. And if they weren't, you know, we wouldn't be here. So I will gladly meet anybody and everybody and sign magazines or whatever. I'm not going to be able to bring magazines with me, unfortunately, because DEF CON charges too much for tables and I don't have the luggage space and whatnot, but I'll be glad to meet as many people as possible. And Not Theory will be naked, so that's a bonus.
Yeah, I'm always naked at DEF CON.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have the shaving cream bikini on, but most of the time I'm just naked.
Yeah, that's why usually we push him into the pool first thing when the party starts, so get him all washed up and clean. All right, let's see. The last email here. You know what? I'm going to be lazy again. Why don't you read this one for me?
Which one are we talking about here? Luminaire?
From Luminaire, the last email.
All righty. Luminaire says, I have the honor and distinguishment of working my ass off to become a highly placed network technician at a large company. However, I'm still young in years. I wish I had a dollar for every time that I had my credentials questioned due to my age or lack of practical experience. I have been questioned twice in the past week regarding my ability to perform simple operations on a production Linux server by people I wouldn't trust with an account, even on my least important Unix box. I was recently asked if I was qualified to work on a production Linux system, and shortly thereafter questioned how to determine IP address under FreeBSD. Unfortunately, the very same arrogant individuals who piss you off actively work against me by encouraging others to look for an unpronounceable title, followed by a healthy alphabet soup instead of talent and ability. In the last few weeks, I've been forced to partially join in on the smoke blowing and add a title to my signature file. Unfortunately, the frequency with my qualifications have been questioned has decreased, most likely due to the addition of this useless piece of information. The long and the short is that idiots are easily led by smoke and mirrors instead of paying attention to what really matters, the ability to perform a task. I hope I haven't wasted your time, and what I said makes sense. Keep up the good work, Stank and Not Fury.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, to me anyway. How about you?
Oh, yeah. That's why on all my emails, I write the alphabet like 15 or 20 times and just put a bunch of punctuation and spaces in there, and people never email me back.
Yeah, people, holy crap, this guy knows everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I this is obviously kind of a response somewhat to my rant, or rants, plural, but I had a pretty good rant about the whole security professional thing and all those damn letters that people put after their name like they're somehow impressive to me. No, it's your actions, and it's exactly that. I mean, this email was just hit it right on the head. Luminaire, you absolutely hit it. You get it. You know what we're talking about. You feel exactly the way I feel, that it's all about what you can do, not what stupid title you have. There's a lot of people out there that work their way up and have impressive-sounding titles, whether they be IT titles, government people, gosh, just any number of examples, but we'll stick with IT here. And so much of it is based on politics and who you know and who you blow and et cetera, and how much ass you kiss. So many things. But the bottom line is, can you do the job? See, the thing is, most people don't have enough understanding themselves to judge someone else's competency. They're not smart enough to determine if you're smart or not. And that's so sad. I need a moment to cry silently for a second here. It's really, really sad. They're so incompetent that they can't tell if you're competent. And that's what bugs me. I mean, it's like they'll rely on other people, and other people in the form of certifying agencies to give you these letter alphabet soup crap after your name. And because you have that, oh, well, I'm not smart enough to tell if this person's competent, but he's got these letters after his name, so someone smarter than me must say he's okay, so therefore I say he's okay. He must be great because he's got that. I mean, is that not the most ridiculous concept you've ever heard? That's like me saying, you know, Knot Theory, Tron is one elite motherfucker. You know that, right?
Oh, I know.
All right, see?
I recognize, fool.
I validated it, and therefore it must be true.
Yeah, of course.
That's such a bizarre concept to me. It really is just, very frustrating, and, yeah, anybody who relies on a piece of paper or these letters or anything like that obviously is lacking intelligence, competency, whatever, themselves. And personally, I've got... I don't want to sound like an ass, but I do think I have kind of a gift for... I can know within moments of meeting somebody whether they know what they're talking about or not. I'll know within a few minutes of speaking to you from your tone of voice, from the content of what you say, and what you don't say, you know, and what you're willing to say or pretending. I can read people very well, so I don't know. It's great certifications. There's nothing wrong with them, per se. You know, you'll learn something from them, but relying on those is way too much. Certification should be a bonus, not a certification of competency, because it certainly is not. But I guess I'm not going to go into too much of a rant on this, but a little bit of a soapbox, that in the business world, I mean, this is reality, and not theory. I know you can back me up on this. It's very common in the business world. There's so many people, and there's so many incompetent people, that they have to make these rules to generalize everything so that they can judge competency and can make decisions. There's no such thing as a case-by-case basis in the business world. They're going to lump everybody under the same banner and say, okay, well, everybody has to have this certification, or you obviously aren't good enough to do your job. You know, they make these generalizations of people, and they'll automatically assume that because somebody has XYZ piece of paper, they must automatically be better than anybody else. I know 15, 16-year-old young people who will blow the crap out of a lot of system administrators out there making $80,000 a year. Can I get an amen?
Illegal.
Can I get an amen on that? Oh no, I'm sorry. I didn't mean Michael Jackson blow. I didn't mean like,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I didn't mean like on Neverland Ranch kind of. No.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's pretty sad, and it was one of the things that really drug me down for a while when I was younger, and I finally learned it the hard way. I had some incidents and some problems at different jobs where I questioned decisions and I went about things differently than other people. They ask you to do it one way and I would find a better way, a faster, more efficient way, and it ends up coming back to haunt me. I end up paying the price for it. So I kind of realized that in the business world, people are set in their ways. It's very difficult to change that system head on, going into it head on with that attitude of, you know, I'm going to change everybody because I know more than them. Well, you know what? Sometimes knowing more than them is not enough. So I learn to adapt and fight from the inside. And that's what I try to do every day. I go into work, and again, not theory, I'm sure you can back... Well, I don't know, maybe you can back me up on this. Have to go in every day in your business casual. You've been there for...
No.
No, you didn't have to do... Oh, jeez. See, I have to go in...
I've been lucky enough to... you know, get some pretty well-paying jobs that absolutely never required any type of attire that was like business casual or anything like that. I would just go in wearing whatever I want. Doesn't matter if it's Jimi Hendrix T-shirt or fucking Fear Factory T-shirt, whatever. I could wear whatever the hell I want and nobody gave a shit.
Yeah, one of my earlier jobs was like that. But as I moved up the ladder into different positions, I had to conform, as it were, and have to smile and nod and kind of play the political games and whatnot. So I realized that kind of fighting and arguing head-on with stuff and questioning things is not exactly the way to go about it. Money talks to these people, and putting together a nice presentation or writing up a paper, an analysis side-by-side, showing that, you know, an open-source alternative would be more successful or will save a lot of money, a cost-benefit analysis type thing, show stuff like that. And believe it or not, there's a lot of social engineering that goes into this. Like what I did one time, for example, to sell a project or sell a piece of software to someone, was I showed them that it was in this particular trade magazine, and the person who was running the department who made that decision got interviewed in this trade magazine. Wow, you're the first person to ever do this, and this is groundbreaking. How do you feel about... And I actually sold this to one of my managers saying, hey, that could be you. You would be getting the credit. You could be in the magazines being interviewed. You would look great. The department would look great. The university would look great. You. And it worked. I got a piece of software sold and moved in, and the decision made by doing that. So change things from the inside, I guess. If you're lucky, like not theory, and can get a, you know, you're in a position where you don't get hassled by the man so much, then God bless you. But those are few and far between. You're very lucky to have had a position like that. Everything that I've ever seen is very, very business casual, I guess, is the only nice way to do it. So, yeah, it kind of sucks sometimes. It's annoying how certain things happen in the business world and certain people are treated and respected based on certifications and papers and things that are honestly meaningless in the grand scheme of things. The important thing is, how do you respond to it? You know, you can hack the system, but you have to hack it from the inside sometimes. Anyway, boy, that was way too overkill for that topic, I think, but...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, I had to get some things off my chest. See, a lot of this is therapeutic for me. So, like, you
that's
as the listeners... Yeah, you as the listeners... No. That was all me. That was all about just me feeling... I just laid back on my couch and was just kind of venting, and you guys are just my psychiatrist out there. You're just listening to me bitch and complain. And oh, how true that is sometimes. All right, well... I knew that was going to... We had a lot of email, a lot of good email. We got a little bit of time left. We can't... Let's do a quick show and tell, I guess. And let's see. I'll go quickly first, and then I can take a breath here. I mentioned earlier that we had our BenRev meeting, so I'm not going to go into too much detail about that. I already talked about that at the beginning. One other follow-up thing. I mentioned quite a while back that I was putting together a Windows Server 2003 box, and I was talking about how I had 6 hard drives in there, 1.5 terabase server mirrored. RAID 5, and I ended up having problems with it because I had it configured incorrectly, excuse me. When I installed, and I was running it on Windows XP, that was basically my mistake. So I upgraded to Server 2003, and wouldn't you know it, the Adaptec controller cards I was using were not detected. They weren't being recognized on Server 2003, and therefore the four hard drives that were writing on them were also not recognized. So, yeah, that kind of stumped me for a little bit. However, all I had to do was go in there and manually install standard drivers for it. So I do not have them RAID. I do not have any kind of mirroring or any kind of backup. I just map them as normal hard drives, and I'm using external hard drives just to occasionally back up the important stuff off of them. That's it. I'm not dealing with the RAID crap anymore. I just got basically six independent 250 gig hard drives running on there. So that's it. We formatted them all, and now I'm back up to 1.5 terabytes of storage, baby.
I thought that with Windows 2003 server, or whatever the hell you've got, that you could go into the disk manager and not use the hardware RAID, but use their own software RAID. You didn't want to do that?
No, I can't. Yes, you can use software RAID, but after my previous burns, I just said, you know what, the data that I have on there are like my MP3 files and like the Audacity files of BenRev Radio and just a lot of miscellaneous stuff. It's not that important. It's all stuff that can be replaced.
Yeah.
So I said it wasn't that big a deal. So what do you got going on there, buddy?
Oh, you still there? Your phone just cut out big time.
Really? Yeah, I heard some static there for a second. Once again, Voice Pulse rules.
Yeah, Voice Pulse owns you.
Okay, show and tell. What do you got?
Show and tell.
What are you working on?
You know, I've been working, doing my thing, about to release a couple of new products for my business that I don't want to talk about. But I also might be in the process of getting sued by a really big company.
That's
I'm pretty
fun.
Excited. Let's hear it for trademark law and big companies.
Well, personally, I personally think that you're going to be fine, but whatever.
I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, you still got to play it safe.
Other than working and trying to, I'm always trying to take my business projects and kind of like share, you know, take whatever I use for my business and kind of put some of that stuff as maybe not open source, but as like the code for Bell's Mind, whatever. Try to integrate all the stuff I do so I don't waste my time. And recently I've been doing a lot of that, so that's why I keep talking about these planned updates for Bell's Mind. So stuff's coming. I just can't say when. Hopefully before DEF CON, but who knows.
Yeah, we might have some other stuff coming up before DEF CON. I went and picked up a hard drive. I guess I can mention this in the show and tell. I went and picked up an external hard drive that I had loaned a friend of mine, Dr. Zygmunt, who was doing some... Oh, man, I don't want to throw this out there as a teaser and have people start emailing me, but doing some work on Hack TV, and I think we might be getting really, really close. So, gosh, I hate saying that on the air because now people are going to be more anxious for it, but it may be there. I mean, we have to sit down and take a look at it, but I think we're really, really close. So hopefully also before DEF CON we'll have that out, maybe soon, maybe even within a week or two, but we will see. All right, well, again, we had to catch up on email. I know a lot of people don't like it when we do an all-email show, but we did have to catch up for missing a week, so you got to give us a little bit of break on this one. We do have a main topic tonight, and I think we still can cover it. We got 20 more minutes or so worth of talk time left before we have to start wrapping it up. So our main topic we wanted to talk about tonight is, wow, did I just break up on you again? Because it got real staticky.
Yeah, it disappeared, but you're back.
Okay. It's funny, I can actually hear it on my end when what you're talking about. God, Voice Pulse rocks!
Well,
we have talked about on the past relational database management systems. We've talked about Postgres and how much we both like Postgres. I've talked about general database concepts before. And I think I've done some like a mini review on maybe SQL Server and some things like that in the past. Well, thought we'd kind of retouch on some of that today, but really do more of a comparison because that's really the reason I have Knot Theory on the show with me, because we have this conversation privately a lot, and you made the comment last week we were looking for a certain feature, and quite honestly I don't even remember what it is offhand now. I think it was some kind of limiting. How many batches, start to finish kind of
Oh, yeah, I remember exactly what it was. It was, why is there a limitation of Transact SQL to only have 16 levels of recursion?
Is that what it was?
That's
no, I think that was a different one. Weren't we looking for one that would only do the last X number or between this number?
That's the one. SQL Server has no limit clause.
Limit, that's it, the limit clause. I couldn't think of the term there. The limit clause.
Yeah, Postgres has these two SQL clauses called limit and offset, which are really useful when you have a bunch of records in a row and you want to really quickly like display them on a web page, display the first 10 results and then display the next 10 results, like you see on the web all the time. But there's really no easy way to do it, or no straightforward and obvious way to do it in SQL Server. Yeah.
Right. And what came of that conversation that prompted me to kind of retouch on this topic on the show is, You had asked me about, you know, if I knew of a way to do that in SQL Server 2000. I said, no, I don't think you can. And your comment was, how could commercial software possibly be behind open source software? Because SQL Server is not cheap. It's not the most expensive thing out there, but it's also not the cheapest. How could it be behind?
It's cheaper than MySQL, according to Microsoft. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's total cost of ownership, and it came from Microsoft.com, so you know it's got to be all factual. Well,
yeah.
Actually, no. I don't think it singled out MySQL on that white paper. It said leading Linux relational database management system. Isn't that what it said?
Yeah, and
we can assume,
when they say leading, they don't mean,
right,
you know, most featureful. They mean the one that has the largest installed user base, which definitely, I don't care what anybody says, has to be MySQL.
Right, absolutely right. And you know it's not Postgres because the price would say zero, which we're going to touch on that in a few minutes. But yeah, you made that comment, and you know I also pointed out that you got to keep in mind that SQL Server 2000 for a reason. This is 2005. So, yes, SQL Server is overdue. I mean, by the end of the year, SQL Server 2005 should be released with a lot more features, so I'll give it somewhat credit. But, I mean, it is 5 years old. You know, it's been out. I actually have, somewhere laying around here, I actually have a 12-month copy, a 12-month preview copy of SQL Server 2005 that I'm going to be installing and playing with very soon on that SQL Server 2003 server. Wish they'd stop naming the things by years. It's getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
But we'll see if that's got some new limit clauses in it or what other features it might have. But it just, again, it got me to thinking, you know, maybe we ought to sit down and do a comparison. I know we've talked about individual features and likes and dislikes about them, but I thought we'd talk about some pros and cons of the different ones. And we'll mention several different ones, but probably focused on Postgres and MySQL, and a little bit of SQL Server as well. Because, I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of this. There's like this weird, I don't know, war online of MySQL users versus Postgres users.
Right.
You aware of this, I assume?
Yeah, I'm aware of it. I used to actually feed the fire a little bit, talking to people and saying, like, you know, when I first started using databases, I got to admit, I used MySQL, and I used it for a little while, and I said, what the, why does anybody need any more functionality than this? Because there would be these Postgres guys always saying, oh, Postgres has more features. And I was, you know, I was naive, and I would think, okay, there's select, insert, update, delete. That's it.
Pretty much.
But there's a lot more to databases than that. And now that I know that, now I can't go back.
Well, with MySQL, you don't get a whole lot. I guess I shouldn't put it down that badly, but, I guess the long and short of it is if you do have a very small database, one or two tables, well, you can even have multiple tables, but it's not really designed, right now anyway, it doesn't have the features to do large-scale applications. If you're doing small sites, small one or two table databases, even 10 table databases, where you're doing straightforward one-to-one relationship read and writes kind of things, or just inserts to store data or whatever, then MySQL is fine. But if anybody honestly believes that MySQL is even in the same league as Postgres, and of course I'm talking about current versions, I understand before anybody writes to me and defending MySQL, I realize that MySQL 5.0 is supposed to be coming out to add a lot of support. But, I mean, right now, MySQL doesn't even have stored procedures and views and triggers and things like that in it. And this is stuff that, if you're doing any serious database work, is a must-have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just Postgres you can actually use in a corporate environment. It has all the features that you want or need just about. I mean, it is comparable to the commercial databases. And in some cases, better.
Yeah, I totally agree. Sir? Postgres had some, Postgres 8, first of all, Postgres 8 fixed a few things that bothered me about Postgres 7, and now it's just amazing. There's only maybe one or two complaints I have about it, and that's it. And that's tough for me. For a piece of software, I complain about everything, about every piece of software. I think they all suck, but Postgres is just awesome.
Yeah, even like right now, I know Logos X and I are working on converting the Hacker Movies project over to a PHP solution powered by MySQL. And even to do something as simple as a movies database, we're having problems because I can't do a one-to-many relationship easily. I have to write all these convoluted, over-engineered solutions. And when I say I have to write, I don't think I'm really wanting to move it over to Postgres because it's just not... It's just so frustrating trying to do that in MySQL.
Yeah.
So, one thing that they both have in common is they both have a web interface. PHP MyAdmin, PG MyAdmin, is that what the Postgres is called?
Yeah, PHP PG Admin, I think.
PG Admin. They're both pretty similar. They both pretty much offer the same similar functionality. I have to say, though, and I don't know if you're going to disagree with me here, but I have to say that I do like Microsoft's management server much better. I like the management interface that Microsoft sends with SQL Server 2000, and I assume with SQL Server 2005, I haven't seen yet. I do like their management system. I do think it's better.
Yeah, I used it actually once before, and I think it's nice looking. It definitely gets things done a little bit faster,
right.
But I don't know that it's really a showstopper for me, not having something like that.
Yeah, especially when, and this is what I find interesting, to get your SQL Server certifications, even though it comes with this pretty point-and-click management tool, when you take the exam, you have to know how to do it all via command line anyway. You have to know how to type in all the SQL to do the same things. You have to memorize the alter commands. You have to memorize the backup commands. You have to memorize all these different things and be able to type them in or answer the questions with the actual commands on the test, not click here, click there. So it's kind of funny. The tool is very, very good, but you damn well better know what you're doing behind the scenes as well. I actually have to say I like that they test you on that. Because a lot of people can memorize where to click, but they don't know why they're clicking there. So
right.
I like that about it. So I definitely like the SMS from SQL Server. I like the PHP MyAdmin and stuff also, but it's just sometimes it's not quite enough for me. Sometimes. Especially, again, with stored procedures and things like that. I still like going to the command line and just putting those in. So... I don't know, I guess to each their own.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what else? How about operating system? Obviously, that's a limitation with Microsoft SQL Server. It only runs on Microsoft Windows.
Well, you could technically run it in Linux under VMware.
Well, true, but you know what I mean.
So let's not say that's a limiting factor, come on.
Yeah. I don't think it'll interact too well with the other Linux components and whatnot.
No, not really.
Yeah. Set up a cron job to launch something in the VMware window. Nah, yeah. Good luck.
Actually, there is some type of weird scripting language for a particular version of VMware. I forget which one it is, but that lets you script things, like mouse clicks and all kinds of other stuff like that to automate installs of crappy Windows software that don't support it.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So there's a possibility to do some pretty fancy stuff. But
that is...
Yeah, let's not say that SQL Server under VMware is a realistic situation.
Right. And and also we should throw out there that most relational database management systems are very... they have very high system requirements, generally speaking. Obviously, the more you do with them and the more data that they have to push and control and maintain, the more they need. But generally speaking... you really want to throw a powerful box if you're going to run any real database stuff against it.
Yep.
So as far as operating...
storage. A lot of people try to run, some little database server on like an 80-gig hard drive or just like one huge, like 250-gig hard drive.
Right.
It's been my experience that if you don't have RAID going, your database is going to perform like shit if it's significantly large. So.
Well, and just to give you a little bit of an idea, like the new SQL Server 2005, Microsoft SQL Server 2005, they're coming out with four different versions. There's the low end, which is called Express, and the Enterprise, which is the high end. And the Express version, the maximums, the limits on it are 1 gigabyte of RAM and 4 gigabytes of database size. So, I mean, that's the maximums for it, but you're going to be approaching that if you're going to do any kind of business environment or any kind of real database. You're going to be approaching that quickly. The Enterprise allegedly has no limit on how much RAM it'll support and no limit on database size.
I think it's funny because I don't know how they pull that off.
Exactly. I'd like to see that. But, hey, whatever. It also says it'll support any number of CPUs. There's no limit on how many CPUs it'll support.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another interesting topic.
So we could start like a distributed computing project, like SQL at home.
Yeah, wow, you sound like you're in a tunnel now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Voice Pulse is really, really good stuff. All right, well, let's see, we talked about that. Also, let's talk about support. I guess we have to give... I guess we have to give a little bit of an edge to MySQL on this, just simply for the sheer fact that the installed user base is so high. There's so many people using MySQL, and so many sites out there giving support and forums and whatnot, that by sheer numbers, I think they'd have to have the best support, at least between that and Postgres. I know there's Postgres has some good support out there also, and some good people using it. Especially seems to draw more of the hardcore techies because they realize the power of Postgres. So you might get more competent support from them. But general support, I think you probably get better for MySQL if you really needed it.
Yeah, we tend to, maybe not better support, but there's a more breadth of support.
Right.
If you search for something on Google, you're going to get a lot more hits saying, like, you know, how do I update this particular field? And, like, I think you'll have more people documenting the quirks of MySQL, but not necessarily maybe how to do more advanced things in it.
Right.
Whereas with Postgres, so I can search like how to do some crazy stuff, and then people have come up with it. But that's just me.
Right. Well, and you know what? I guess let's kind of segue that into another comparison when you want to compare databases. One of the things that people always talk about is speed. And speed measurements between different databases. You know, a lot of people talk about MySQL being faster than Postgres. I've heard that comment made before. I don't know that that's necessarily true or false, but no matter what that is, speed of a database management system can be very, very misleading because, as a matter of fact, any benchmarking tool these days can be gamed, can be rigged. I mean, the way they're written, you can optimize things very easily. So you may run one query against MySQL, and it's optimized or indexed properly to make it run very fast, whereas running the same query on Postgres or SQL Server or something, if it's indexed differently, or even if it's indexed the same, it still might not run the same as another one. So comparing speed, I don't put a whole lot of value on that. You'd really have to convince me that they are identical queries running in identical environments, et cetera, et cetera.
And here's the other thing, though. Like, you know, MySQL may be great at doing, like, simple queries, but like you said, sometimes to do things in MySQL, you've got to write, like, really weird code and hack things together, whereas in Postgres, there may be one simple statement for it, and that statement itself is optimized. So
all right.
You get better. I think you get better performance on the more exotic selects and updates and stuff like that in Postgres.
That's
in my experience.
Yeah, you may have to write three different selects in MySQL. Well, you would have to write three different selects, two of them inserting data into two temporary tables, which are then joined by a third select to get the data that you want, whereas in Postgres, it supports subquerying, where you can do it all in one statement. So that's a very good example of something like that, and it would run phenomenally faster. Individually, the MySQL queries might run faster, but, well, anyway, that's just another example. One other thing, and you mentioned this earlier, I think, in a kind of a backhanded comment. I'm not sure if it even got picked up on the microphone, but the SQL that each one of them uses. Just to reiterate, we've said this on the show before, but SQL is SQL. SQL is SQL. Sequential Query Language is Sequential Query Language. It is a standard, just like ANSI-C is a standard. There is a standard SQL. However, that being said, each database management system will add their own little functions to it and their own little styles and methods. And as long as they support most basic SQL stuff like select, insert, delete, stuff like that, drop, whatever, they'll most of them will support the basic standard stuff, but each one's going to have its own nuances as far as how it passes parameters and how it names variables and things like that. And I came from an Oracle shop, which we haven't mentioned much on the show, because it's the most expensive of all the database management systems, and some would say the most stable. But I had trouble switching from Oracle, which used something called PLSQL, over to SQL Server 2000, which uses something called TSQL or Transact SQL. And you kind of said something earlier about Transact SQL.
Oh, garbage. Total garbage.
It's one of the things I hate about it more than anything is the way it handles joins. I think the way Oracle and PLSQL handles joins is so much more intuitive and simpler, and quite honestly, saves me a lot of typing. I think TSQL, Microsoft's SQL, is kind of like the COBOL of SQL. It makes you write out way too much stuff for just silly reasons. So I prefer PLSQL from Oracle, and Postgres, as it turns out, and I'm sure you are definitely more knowledgeable in this than I am, uses something very similar to PLSQL. I think it's even called PG.
It's called PLPGSQL.
There you go.
But I've never used PLSQL. I've heard from people that they're fairly similar, but I can't really guarantee that the migration is going to be all that simple. There is a section, I think, in the Postgres user manual talking about how to migrate from Oracle to Postgres, though. So I'm sure it's a lot easier than Transact SQL.
Right, and actually, we'll use that as a segue to the last thing that I wanted to cover tonight, and that is the reason that topic came up, and I did read that also. The reason that came up is because a lot of people are, in fact, switching from Oracle to Postgres. I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but there are more and more of them each day switching from Oracle to Postgres. And there's one very, very big, clear reason why, and we alluded to this earlier, but I think we can both safely admit, and I said it in my little rant earlier, the bottom line is the almighty dollar. And if Postgres has almost all the features of Oracle, and almost all the features, if not more, than SQL Server, and certainly more than the current version of MySQL, there's one other factor. If all of those things alone don't do it for you, Postgres comes under what type of licensing scheme?
The BSD license, I believe.
Which means, of course,
you can modify it and use it for commercial use with no restrictions.
And all you have to do with the BSD license is maintain credit. You can't take off the strip off the headers of the credit, but you can absolutely use it in a business environment at no cost, do whatever modifications, et cetera, whatever you need. It's one of the most free and liberal licenses that there are. And even MySQL is under the GPL for nonprofit use, for personal use. And that's why so many people work with that on their websites, because that's free and it's small and easy, and it does offer enough things that most people want to use. But Postgres is really, I think, the most robust, the most powerful database system out there, especially for the cost. I mean, you really don't compare Postgres to MySQL. You compare Postgres to Oracle and SQL Server, and that's really saying a lot. MySQL is just a specialized area. If you're writing a small site, and I guess this is kind of a summary, if you're writing a small website with a couple tables, nothing complex, you just want to store some data and regurgitate some data back out, MySQL will get the job done, and it'll do it fine, and it'll do it fast, and it won't cost you anything. It's free for personal use, and it's a great solution. Not knocking it, there's nothing wrong with that. You'll find a lot of support for it. It comes standard default on a lot of installs, but so does Postgres. If you're doing anything more complex, you want to go with Postgres as a solution if you're a personal developer, a personal user. If you're a business user, basically you really have two big options. There are a lot of others, don't get us wrong. We're excluding quite a few. But there are two big players, and that is SQL Server from Microsoft and Oracle. Oracle is the most expensive. If cost is not an object and you're willing to spend whatever money it is for a stable, reliable, dependable server with all the support money can buy, go with Oracle. And if you're a Microsoft shop, go with Microsoft. So that's pretty much the summary of them all. But those people that are looking at Oracle and Microsoft, I very much encourage you to look at Postgres. At least if you're thinking about implementing some large-scale database, at least put it on your list of databases to compare. Give it a chance. Put it up next to the others. And I think you'll be very, very surprised. So, that's it. What do you think? Do we leave anything out? I know we could go on about this for hours, but we're running low here.
No, I can't really think of anything other than Postgres is the best database ever created. You know?
Yeah.
That's a fact. It's not an opinion.
Yes, certainly it is. All right, shout-outs this week. I kind of mentioned one earlier, but I'm going to give shout-outs again to Dr. Zygmunt, who's been helping with quite a few projects, actually. He's been very active, really good guy. I like working with him on a lot of things and talking to him and hearing his opinion on stuff. Very, very good feedback from him. Shouts to Tabiz, to Mia Flux, and to Logos X, everybody from our inaugural, our very first Binary Revolution meeting. So shouts to all of them. And what do you got for me this week there, buddy?
I'm going to give shouts to USPTO.gov. no, I don't know. I can't really think of anything too exciting.
I was going to make binrevmeetings.com the site of the week, but you know what? I think I'm going to use uspto.gov. I think we'll make a dual sites of the week there.
Well, if that's the case, then shit, how about I give shouts to uspto.gov, QuickBooks Online.
No, you don't want to do that one. You don't want to get shouts.
Tories, the law firm in Manhattan. I'll give them shouts, props. they're fearsome. They're elite.
Do you really think they want to be mentioned on a hacker show?
Probably not. But I don't really think they care, honestly.
Okay. All right, and if you want to give us feedback on the show,
I can't even hear you anymore.
Wow, I got real big static. I think Voice Pulse is getting pissed off at me now. We've been on the phone over an hour, so we better wrap this up. Email us feedback for anything you've heard on the show is radio@binrev.com. Closing music this week is from Luomo, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, called Tessio Moonbotica Mix. So a little disco funk for you. And I think that is it. Not Theory, thank you for being on the show. Boy,
anytime.
This is... Yeah, it is. It is... Okay, I guess I'll tell everybody. It is 7:45 right now. We got to go live with the show. I got to have this mixed and uploaded and everything in an hour and a half. So this is going to be interesting. So I guess if you're hearing this on DDP Hack Radio, then I guess we made it in time. And if not, oops, download only. See you next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Bitches.
Your child.